Hey, y'all. The Fallen Podcast is an Augusta University and Georgia Cyber Center production. Thanks for tuning in. Things are about to get wild.
Augusta University presents In the Wild, the podcast for all things Augusta University. With this week's Quick Jag, here's your host, Rayshawn Ricks.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to In the Wild, and joining me in the studio is our amazing co-host, Miss Ania Clark. How's it going?
It's going well, Rayshawn. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, it's another day. I can't believe that we are already in March. This semester is flying by, and before you know it, you'll be getting ready to leave us.
Yes, I know. It's already March. February flew by, but March, I'm pretty sure, is going to fly by as well. This semester has been super, super busy, but I'm keeping my head above water, so.
I feel you. I'm really excited for March because I get to travel this month.
Ooh, where are you going?
So I'll be going very soon to Boston. It'll be my first time there, and I will be working with some very awesome people from Yale to present about podcasting. So for those that don't know, our podcast is very unique in a lot of different ways, and it is being noticed for that. So I get to work with people from Yale. I can't wait to put that on my resume.
Yes, from Yale. That's a big thing. Like, I know it'll go well. So yes, like, that's really big, and I'm super, super proud of you.
Oh, thank you. So yes. I'm excited to go to Boston. I've got some other trips planned out, and hopefully I can do something this summer because, you know, we're kind of getting, I don't want to say past COVID because that's not necessarily true, but we're kind of getting to a point where, you know, we can be a little bit more social and go out more. So, yep, I'm looking forward to March and hopefully how we end this semester. But just diving right into it, let's get into my favorite segment to do, and that's Wild Topics. So, getting us started with our first topic, in the news, we have seen actress Amanda Bynes filing to end her conservatorship. And for those who may not know, in 2013, after a string of bizarre episodes, she had her family step in to enact a conservatorship on her behalf because she was doing some very weird things.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very weird stuff, which included soaking her pet in gas while she set her neighbor's driveway on fire. And it kind of resulted in her being in a psychiatric facility. And even though we're far removed from that, it's been almost 10 years, she's asking to end her conservatorship. What do you, and I just wanted to pose the question to you, what do you think about conservatorships, including Britney Spears? Because she also, she actually had her conservatorship end, but what do you think?
I mean, it's obvious that Amanda definitely needed someone to like just step in and support her based off her actions. But I don't know, like, I guess we'll see if like conservatorships are actually like helpful depending on like how she acts after it ends. But I mean, like, it does seem like with her actions, she's probably not the most, or probably shouldn't be the person to, you know, handle her finances or like handle her personal affairs. So I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, like, are you really helping her as far as like her mental well-being? Like, I wonder what the parents are actually doing. Like, has she actually gotten like real, like, mental health? So that's what I feel bad for that dog, though. I wonder how the dog is doing.
Yeah, I don't know how you
or is the dog even alive, because it's 2022 now. But I wonder, yeah, did the dog recover from that? That was really sad.
Yeah, that's scary. And it just makes, because I feel so conflicted, because the idea of conservatorships, I guess, are in the right place, right? Like,
yeah,
we want to make sure we're protecting this person because we fear they may not can take care of themselves. But then you look at Britney Spears' situation, and then you could see it as, okay, this is someone who is using her conservatorship against her and kind of just taking advantage of her, taking control of her, and putting her in these abusive situations, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Amanda is experiencing the same thing, but like I want to make sure that as or I guess the courts, because it ain't me. No, like, how do you judge or how do you determine, like, this person can take care of themselves and is no longer harm to themselves or to someone else? Like, it's so difficult, I feel like, to get out of a conservatorship when someone puts that in place. So I guess that's, like, my biggest thought of should we even, like, how, like, what are the terms to end a conservatorship, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, once you get in it, it's so difficult because people will look at you a certain way and it's hard to change your perception. Once you are perceived as unstable, it's hard to, you know, like, everything will be used against you. So,
yeah, I wonder, like, what's the motive behind some parents, like, going to the court and telling them, like, hey, I want to be in control of my child's finances, you know, just be in control of them overall. Like, is it for the money? Is it because of their name? Or, like,
yeah,
do you really care about the well-being of your child?
Exactly.
And that's what I try to figure out. And also, I wonder, like, is it a privilege? Is it more like a privilege thing? Because usually when you hear about conservatorships, you hear it about celebrities. Like,
yep,
you don't really hear about, you know, people who aren't, you know, well-known. So,
mm-hmm,
like, is it more of a privilege thing? Is it more of, I want to make sure, you know, my child doesn't lose all their money because, you know, we don't know. Maybe the parents are living off their
childhood. Yeah, it's also hard to determine someone else's intentions, like you said, to put them on a conservatorship. And I also noticed, too, when we talk about conservatorships, we talk about women. I don't really know of any men off the top of my head that have been placed under a conservatorship.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, and it's Women's History Month, so, you know,
just
throwing that out there.
Yeah.
But hit us with our next topic.
So our next topic is about Cardi B. She has won a defamation lawsuit against YouTuber Tasha K. Cardi B was targeted by her real name is Latasha. I'm about to butcher her name. Transrina Kebby, but she goes by the name Tasha K. So apparently, she was defaming Cardi B. She was intending to damage and destroy her reputation among her fans, according to a 2019 lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court, Northern District of Georgia. So how do you feel about bloggers being held accountable for saying things about people that aren't true?
Well, as you know, because we're both comm majors, or I guess in my case, grad. So one of my first classes that I took getting into the major was media law and ethics.
Mm.
And we learn about libel, we learn about defamation and slander. And the first, you know, things as a journalist or someone who is a communication professional, it is to just simply, first and foremost, tell the truth.
Right.
And I think with the current space of social media, like, it's so easy for people to position themselves as a blogger, even though they don't have the same goals as we do as journalists or as storytellers, as I like to call myself. And so for me, it's really insulting when you see some of these bloggers or YouTubers just kind of make up these lies just so they can, you know, get money off of clickbait.
Right.
Like, as long as I say these things and people tune in and I get paid, it's okay because it won't damage anyone. When, from my perspective, it damaged our
career field and our profession.
Yeah, like, it's offensive to us to see you make profit off of lies. And then not even talking about how it affects the actual person in question, like, not even thinking of how it affects Cardi B, just as a storyteller, seeing someone else getting famous, making lies about someone else, like, that's insulting because, like I mentioned before, like, we put in 4 years of hard work to earn this degree,
right.
We paid for this degree, did a lot of things to for people to take us seriously, and to see someone else just call themselves, you know, a blogger or a journalist, and all they're doing is spreading lies just to make money, that, I don't like that.
Yeah, I think Cardi B was right for filing the lawsuit. You know, I think a lot of people might think, oh, well, Cardi B is this famous person. She makes millions of dollars. Why would she go over? She's probably not going to go after someone who's small and, you know, not as famous as her. But that's not the point. The point of it is this woman intentionally defamed Cardi B. She was putting out false claims and just, there were just lies. Call it what you want. There were just lies about her. And I think Cardi B had the right, she should have went after her, because a lot of people think like celebrities are this hybrid human, but they have emotions just like us. And Cardi B even said like she suffered from this emotionally for years and she's finally got justice for it. And I'm proud of Cardi B. And I think this will serve as an example for other influencers or bloggers.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to scream freedom of speech. And that's true, but that comes with consequences and it comes with a price. And you have to be willing to pay the price for saying what you want to say, even if they're, of course, you're going to pay the price if they're lies. And she did. So I think Cardi B did the right thing. And I hope this serves as an example for other YouTubers that, you know, if you're not trying to put out content that's helpful or entertaining or just positive, I mean,
or truthful,
or exactly truthful, just don't put it out. Like I'm still trying to figure out what was the point of her lying about all this stuff about Cardi B. Like, what was your intentions? What was your motive? Because you really have to be, honestly, you're just sick in the mind for just thinking that this was okay and that, oh, I'm gonna get famous off. Literally, you lied about her having herpes and being a prostitute. Like, something's wrong with you.
Yeah, and like, there's so many ways to make money, and being a liar does not have to be one of them.
Exactly. Like, do a podcast like us and put out positive stuff, girl. What's her name? Tasha K. Like, you could be out here spreading positivity. You're out here spreading false lies about a celebrity, like,
just to make some money.
Not have better things to do.
And I remember her doing an interview after she lost the case, Tasha K. And because she is required to pay Cardi B $4 million.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, I ain't got it. Well, girl, you better go find it.
Yeah. You work hard to come up with these lies. You can work hard to pay her $4 million.
Exactly. But speaking of liars, our next topic kind of goes into something similar about people kind of profiting off of not being truthful. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed, because I love watching TV, that there has been a lot of documentaries and TV shows and just programming about just scammers. And recently I've watched a Tinder Swindler. Have you seen
Me
it?
Me too. Yes, I watched it.
And so for those who aren't familiar, it's a documentary of Simon Lviv and how he basically conned these women out of hundreds of thousands of, and even, oh, I think actually millions of dollars.
And I think it was one lady who ended up shelling out $1 million on this guy.
And I just thought that was so crazy that even though, and I'm not going to go into all of it, so y'all got to watch it if you're interested, but how these women kept giving him money.
Yes.
Like, you're taking out loans, you're selling your things, you're trying to do everything you can to help him fund his lifestyle that he doesn't even need.
Right. It really doesn't even exist because, oh, well, I'm not going to, because I don't want to give it away, but y'all got to watch it. But I think it was mind-boggling because the first time you give someone a loan and they don't pay it back, that's a red flag. You guys kept shelling out money.
And you lost me at, can I get a loan?
Right. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you,
why are you, I mean, in my why are you in my pocket? Exactly. So worry about yours. If you ain't got the money for this lifestyle, then you need to make some changes. I don't care how much you say you love me, Simon.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it. It's like, they haven't even known this guy for over 6 months. Mm-hmm. I think most of them, it was under, I know for a fact, it was under a year. And I'm like, how can you be that comfortable shelling out money to someone that you haven't even known for a year? And then also, they weren't seeing this guy on a regular basis. Right. Like, he always made excuses about, I can't see this out. Son because I got business to handle, da, 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 da. I'm like, you that comfortable?
Red flag.
Money? Right, to somebody that you don't even see on a regular basis?
You ain't got no house?
Right, no, that,
like, and I feel, and I do feel sorry for those women because I know that they were optimistic about dating him, but at the same time, it was just... like someone asking me to take out money for them. Nah, that's no. And also, the show Inventing Anna. Have you seen that one?
No, my sister's been watching it. But the woman who plays Inventing Anna, she's an Ozark. That's the show I'm trying to finish on now. So I'm super excited to see Inventing Anna.
I made it halfway through, and that's just another one of how this woman is literally just lying about who she is so people will give her money and just live in this lavish lifestyle. And for me, who's still trying to pay off these student loans, I'm like, if I could just get somebody to give me just a couple thousand, like, and I ain't even trying to scam nobody, but like, Anna, all this money that you done got from these people and all you doing is buying clothes and living in expensive hotel rooms. Mm-mm. You could have did something for, like, I don't know. I guess I'm just not that materialistic, but it's just so crazy to me how they will make or steal all this money and swindle people out of all this money, and they don't really do anything with it, but just kind of
fund a lifestyle that I will be paying off bills. I'll be starting business. I'll be investing. I'll be creating generational wealth. You talking about clothes? Clothes get holes in them. They start getting dingy. I'm finna make this money work for me.
Exactly. Like, I'm gonna, you know, do something so I'll always be set up.
Right.
And they're just playing with it.
I guess literally playing with it.
I guess because, you know, they never earned it to begin with. But yeah, that's just crazy to me. And then there's a new one coming out on Hulu called The Dropout, which stars, or doesn't star, it's about Elizabeth Holmes, who is played by Amanda Seyfried. Y'all know her from Mean Girls, who founded this health startup that was supposed to have developed a rapid blood test that only required like one drop of blood, but... Mm-hmm. She lied. And so I think it's a mini series, and it kind of just goes into her being exposed, which once again, it's just crazy to me how people will make these companies and do these things to just to make the money. And
I think it's so interesting because like it just seems so realistic. Like these things are actually happen. Well, I know Tinder Swindler, like that actually happens in real life to a lot of people. But like, Netflix just makes it seem so realistic. Like, oh my God, is this actually happening? Like, people actually do this, like, on a, like, regular? It's just crazy. And it's like, I think the reason why I'm so addicted to it is because, like while I'm watching the show, I'm like, oh, I would never do that.
Yeah.
People are crazy. Like, y'all are crazy. Who raised y'all?
Like, or for me, like, y'all are bold.
Yes.
Like, you really want to ask this girl to take out a $10,000 loan and then... After you spend it, you're going to tell her that's not enough. She needs to figure something out to send you $50,000. Like, right. That's bold. Or
they even opened credit cards.
Open credit cards.
I think they had, like, mailed off the credit cards to them to use. They maxed it out.
As soon as he got it.
Yeah. And asking for more money on the card. Like, what is wrong with y'all?
And then with Anna on the show, we seen her, like, staying at her friend's, like, staying up. On her friend's boat after they thought everyone had like left the boat. She's and her boyfriend getting back on the boat, living it up.
Oh my God.
And got the boat crew like, how are we getting paid? Because who like who approved them to like they said they're supposed to be here, but we ain't heard back. Like, it's just crazy how bold some of these people are to do some of this deceitful stuff. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna talk next with some people who aren't deceitful, who's going to tell us the truth, and they are from our undergraduate student government association. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Wesley Walters, a third year medical student at the Medical College of Georgia and the author of the children's book, The Virus That Came to Town. My book tells the story of Monica, Marshall, and their family as they experience a virus. They try to escape the virus but are unsuccessful. After they follow the tips and tricks of their neighborhood doctor, they kick the virus out of town. The goal of this book is to educate and empower children on what to do during a pandemic and how they can work together to heal their community. It also features a catchy hand-washing song that, for better or for worse, will get stuck in your head. Along with helpful tips on what to do during a pandemic and a great hand-washing song, the book also features multiple messages of equality and inclusion. This book speaks to and inspires people of all backgrounds. You can purchase the book, The Virus That Came to Town, at my website, thevirusthatcametotown.com.
Welcome back, y'all, to In the Wild, and joining us in the studio are some very special students because they are here to talk to us about all things SGA. Here we have the president of our undergraduate SGA, Ms. Mahadia Islam, and our senator from the College of Science and Mathematics, Dee Mallory. How's it going?
Good, great. How's it going?
I'm doing well, tired because I've had a long day, you know, lab practicals, y'all, but pretty well.
I feel you. So, y'all already know I used to be SGA president. So SGA always has a special place in my heart. But to get us started, just tell us what's been going on with SGA this year.
I think our primary focus of this year is just to help students transition back to more in-person events, as well as we've been transitioning our meetings from virtual to in-person, and then still work kind of adjusting to the current COVID situation. I want to say that we have tried our best to host events and stay engaged with the student population, as well as gather information from them and then convey that information to the upper staff, administration, so we can explain what the students want. We primarily have done this through our SGA Tell Me Anything. We've also collaborated with, what is it called? I'm so sorry, y'all. Multicultural Student Engagement on the Unity Talent Show. We have held two towns hall these past year. We're working on hosting another one at Oak to engage and learn from the freshmen and what they want. I think Senator D can elaborate more on those town halls because I think those make a huge impact.
So basically, we like to call them in my committee, the Student Affairs Committee. I chair that committee. We like to call it the Freshman Forum. And so basically, it's when we, in the Oak Hall Connect space, we have a group of freshmen come out and a group of senators. And then the senators basically ask the freshmen different questions about different student life, you know, topics, different experience topics, and just try and gauge and see how the year has been going for the students and to see how we can start to do our role as SGA and help the students. Building off what Mahadia said, you know, SGA this year has been really focusing on trying to get us back into that in-person environment and get us back into being, you know, closer to each other. Mm-hmm. And so some of those ways that we're doing that now is really fixing the, okay, a lot of students are coming back on campus, the parking situation, the transportation situations.
Oh, yeah.
And then as more people come back, we have more clubs that want funding. Now we're looking to see how we can start changing our funding in some of our bylaws.
So for our student orgs who are listening, who aren't familiar, could you tell them a little bit about the current, process to get funded as a student org.
So currently the process is by reimbursement basis. And so what that means is your organization will fill out basically an application or a Google form for the funding request. We'll read it over. We'll meet with you. We'll fill out a bill. You'll come to the meeting. And basically we'll read out the bill and the Senate will vote on the bill. And if the bill is approved, then you will be reimbursed. So basically you have your money for your event, you spend that money, and then you tell us how much you spent via your receipts and we give you that money back.
Mm-hmm. And then I will also want to, add, during the pandemic specifically, since a lot of the organizations weren't holding events, SGA had a surplus of our money left. So that's where we actually originated SGA Tell Me Anything, because this was our way of kind of giving back to the students by just giving them a meal, since we had that surplus, and we try to kind of continue that. But since a lot of organizations are doing more in-person things, we've been encouraging them to get funding from us because a lot of our funds are still not fully utilized. That's why Senator D has also been working very hard on amending the bylaws so we can include basically student orgs who already have a set reputation with us, who've worked with us, who's almost loyal to us with funding, that they could request more money than that is already set in the bylaws. Because currently student orgs can only request up to $1,000 per semester. So sometimes $1,000 is a lot of money already, yeah. But like, maybe if you want to do a larger event and maybe it's a collaboration X, Y, and Z or something, they require more money. And Dee's been working really hard on trying to change the bylaws to admit that. And also the reimbursement process, it's very tedious. Yeah. And like some new organizations, they don't have that money. Like, we're college students. We're, to be frank, we're broke. So because of that, you want to talk about how you've been trying to change the bylaws specifically for the new student orgs that are new and how we don't have to use reimbursement. So we don't have to take it out of their pocket, basically.
Yeah. So last semester, this came up as a topic in the Senate because we had organizations who were trying to come to us. They were fairly new organizations, mm-hmm. who were trying to come to us. But, you know, because we work by reimbursement, they couldn't because they didn't have the $500 they wanted, mm-hmm. to request or the $600. And so, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, ultimately, we all pay the student fee. The money that we get is specifically from the student activity fee. So, mm-hmm. why do they have to front that money in the first place? Why can't it just come straight from us? And so that is basically what I'm trying to work on now is we want to call it kind of like a sponsorship, where basically instead of doing the pay up front, we'll reimburse you. You give us basically what you need, we'll provide it for you. And we've basically sponsored your event.
Yeah.
And so this gives new organizations the opportunity to fundraise and not use those fundraising dollars to pay for any other, any other events, because then they can use that for more fundraisers because they can't use student activity fee for fundraising. Yeah. So that now gives them an opportunity to actually have a way to fundraise.
Also, I would like to comment a little farther on that is the way new organizations usually build up their account is to charge students membership fees, which is fine. But sometimes even the membership fees that they charge aren't enough to cover specific events. So this will really help mitigate the friction that's there for students to join clubs, because I think this kind of plays into like in college as a whole, that like we want Augusta University to thrive. We want our retention rates to stay high. So when we get the chance, I think this will this goal we're working on is kind of focusing on keeping that retention rate high eventually. Well, that's how I'm trying to see it as.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I think that could have a very big positive impact for student orgs. Like you said, if they are a new org or if they're a small org, they don't have the funds to, mm-hmm. do some of the things they may intend because they're just so small. So I think that could go a long way.
Yeah, I like that idea too of just giving it to them up front instead of like them giving it to y'all and then reimbursing them. I think the idea that you guys have come up with is smart, and you know, especially with events being on deadline, you know, I think that will also kind of like ease some of the stress of, here you go, we got you your money, you could go ahead and, you know, put your, mm-hmm. event together. I think that's really smart.
And it gives organizations the opportunity to work very close with us as well, because,
yeah.
you know, because, mm-hmm. we are, you know, it's not by reimbursement where you already have to do the bill and you already paid it. You know, we do expect some type of collateral by, you know, having a member of your organization come to our meetings and, you know, see what's going on and, you know, you basically relay back the message to your organization. Mm-hmm. So the word spreads so, yeah. that basically SGA is now collaborating with a whole bunch of different organizations so that they know that they have a place to go when they need this funding. It's marketing to an extent and networking. Yeah.
Um, touching on marketing and networking, it's also, we highly encourage organizations to have one of their members be a senator. Like, the applications are open now. A quick plug to that. They're ending March 9th. But if you have a member who's already a part of SGA, they have a better understanding of how the bills work, because it is a very complicated and meticulous process. So like, we have a couple of the sorority members, so they can explain it to the sorority girls how the bills work. Or we previously had Wendy from ASA part of it, but always having someone in SGA really does help, I think, organizations understand how to get funding. And it's fun.
And it's fun.
So so you guys advise, you know, are you saying like each student org have someone like be a senator to understand, or is it just specific organizations?
Not specific organizations at all, but like just to get a better understanding.
Because the reason why I asked that is I wanted to know, like, what, how many senators are you looking to bring on?
Truthfully, that's a great topic to bring up, because the culture that is surrounding our Senate right now is very lethargic.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is basically we have the senators, but sometimes we don't have the motivation to do the things that we need to do.
Yeah.
And so I think when it comes to our next Senate and our next session, when we look for those people, you know, we're really looking for those people that are going to put in the work. So it really is a determination of who does and who doesn't put in the work as to how many people we're looking for. But we're always looking for people.
Yeah. And then also further on the lethargic part, I think it's also because so how SGA I've seen as a whole has worked, because I've been in it since my freshman year. Gosh, I feel so old. But so the people who are seniors right now are about to graduate. And those are really the members that do a lot, that put in a lot of the effort, because there's always one or two senators that do a lot. And like for me, I was a senator in my first 2 years, and then I eventually transitioned over to becoming a president. So during that transition, I learned that there was a lot of parts, and me and Dee were really talking about this recently. Senators don't fully understand like what their role is. I think that is a part of why. And honestly, that's a part of the disconnect between being a senator and executive board. And just like the executive position is that you kind of take this responsibility on. Sometimes as a senator, they're confused. So I know whoever the next president is, they're going to work really hard on that, because currently I'm working on my transition notes. So going to bold that, because I think SGA is slowly coming up from what happened during the pandemic, because we definitely like took a big hit on just our, well, not just us, but the campus overall. But we're slowly coming back, like rising from the ashes almost. That's a little dramatic. But I really hope that senators will understand their position. And then also a senator represents 200 students per college. Does that make sense? So like example, like Dee's College of Science and Mathematics, we have the most senators for it, because that college usually has a large number of students. Yeah.
So, Mahadia, you have served two terms as president. What would you say are you most proud about? Because literally I talked to you about one of my accomplishments as SGA, but I'm curious to hear yours.
I think my biggest accomplishment, and I want to say there's two.
Okay.
Because and this doesn't happen very often. I think a lot of people don't understand SGA works very slowly. Usually things that other presidents have been working on happen later. Like a president's already graduated, X, Y, and Z. But one of the most unique things, a part of my legacy that I could talk about, is how I was able to adjust the curriculum for Wellness 1000. And it was,
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So what occurred was, this was during the summer of 2020. I just transitioned, and during this time, there was a lot of political strife, Black Lives Matter movement happening, and COVID too. So all this was happening. And I was trying my best to educate myself. And I was also in Wellness 1000. And I brought this idea up in one of the listening sessions we were having. I was like, why don't we have this just be a base curriculum? Because Wellness 1000, not only does it just talk about just being physically healthy, it also talks about mental health. But there's a part of societal health that I think students should work on. So we worked with the Department of Kinesiology and Dr. Page, who is the department chair, as well as Dr. Davies, who is the vice president of enrollment and student affairs. And we were able to make that effective change, I believe spring of 2021. I might be wrong. Or
it was fall of 2020.
Okay. Thank you. But yeah, fall of 20. I think I was so proud of that because I felt like I made a change, even though like it's probably like one more section to there was a different program that they used, but it encouraged students to basically go out to cultural events, this and that. I think that was one of the requirements, or they got extra credit for it. I was so proud of that because like I think education in diversity inclusion is so important, especially nowadays. So that was a very unique like change, because like curriculum change does not happen within a year that fast. Like it usually needs to be reevaluated multiple times. But I think because everybody was on board, and that also like showed what Augusta University cared for, because they wanted to implement it. So that made me very, very proud of our university as a whole. But my second, I would say, accomplishment and legacy, I guess, was SGA Tell Me Anything. This is basically an event that we try to hold every month where we collect data from students on what's going wrong, and we have some specific questions, and we also just give students food. Sometimes we do cake, sometimes we mainly do Chick-fil-A. but we try to, one time we did churros and ice cream and things like that, but it's very laborious and arduous, but I love it because we hear the qualitative information, sometimes seeing the quantitative, and that's how I work too. And sending that direct information to administrations, they can understand it better than just saying, oh, students are complaining about parking, but here is 111 students who literally said they're not happy about parking. They say, yes, I'm having struggles. We have a good retention rate to those events too, because I've noticed the same people coming back and back again. So those are my two. And I hope that the next president will continue with working on continuing SGA Tell Me Anything, because I felt like that was my baby.
I feel you. So speaking of new presidents, are you ready to pass the torch?
Oh, yes. I've learned a lot from this position. I'll be honest, like going into it, I don't see myself as like a leader at all. Like, which is weird. You think, I think the way I'm a leader is I'm a friend. A friend should, like, you should be comfortable going to whoever. I didn't want to be that leader that you were fearful of. So I wanted to be that leader that was next to you, literally pushing you up. I wanted to be that leader that inspired other leaders, because I can't do this alone. And I learned that because the first year I was a president during my first term, it was really hard because one, COVID.
yeah.
And I didn't know how to delegate as well. This year I've gotten so much better, and I think my exec board runs so much better. I'm so thankful for them. And also my, the chairs, like D, they do a lot of work too. Like the chairs are amazing this year too. But yeah, I'm really proud of what I've learned in this role, and I'm ready to pass on the torch because I think I've grown. I think specifically in 2 years, I've noticed such a difference. It's like I've reached that peak of what I can learn, and that now it's time for me to transition over to the next individual.
I feel you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired too. I'm tired. So tired, y'all.
No, I remember from being at Shared President, like that was the most tired I've ever been, ever. Mm-hmm. Ever in college.
Yeah, because that's a laborious role or a position to hold. But, you know, with you being ready to pass the torch, what's your next big thing or what are you looking forward to?
I'll be honest, I am really not sure. Like,
I mean, that's fine.
That's fine. I'm looking into applying to a graduate program, Master of Public Health or Public Administration or Doctor of Physical Therapy after a gap year. I think I'm going back and forth, but one of my end goals is to be, I think, either work in nonprofit work and help just build hospitals in impoverished countries. So I'm actually an immigrant and I'm from Bangladesh. And one of my like lifelong goals is probably when I'm like 50 or something, is to build a hospital back where my grandfather, where he was born, which is like a village. So that's one of my biggest goals. That's why I wanted to go into medicine. So I know like kind of the landscape of that. So I don't know how I'm going to get there, but hopefully a master in public health or public administration, something along those lines will really help.
And I'm sure you'll get there.
Thank you.
And D, you are also quite involved with SGA. And my question to you is, what led you to wanting to be a part of this organization?
So I've been in SGA since I was a first year student here. I think, truthfully, at first, I didn't know what SGA was. I was also a confused senator at first. And we were also, I came in during the fall of 2020, so we were having our meetings online. You know, it wasn't really a full SGA experience. Mm-hmm. And so you think, well, after doing your meetings online, why would you come back again another year? Mm-hmm. And it's because that first year, Mahadia was my RA. And so she was like, did anyone want to be a freshman senator? And I was like, what's that? And she's like, well, I'm the president of SGA.
I really wanted them to join.
Yeah. And she's like, you know, we do so and so and so and so. And so I was like, okay, I'll put my name down for the application. And so she sent me the email, I filled out the application. And then next thing I know, I'm being inaugurated into the Senate. And so it's after that, you know, not a lot of the other senators spoke, but I always tried to find something to say whenever new business came up, whenever, you know, something to help my peers in the current situation. And so I kind of fell in love with that. I know that when I grow up, I want to be a person who helps people. I want to be a psychiatrist therapist. And so I want to be, and then I also want to be a senator of the United States if, you know, global warming doesn't take us out before then. But, you know, I also want to have a political career as well. So I know that who I am as a person is a person who likes to help people. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the biggest reasons why I do SGA is because I know that it is my main tool of helping my peers. Mm-hmm. And I take a lot of pride in it. I like it a lot. And I think one thing that kind of like gets me down about SGA sometimes is that some of the other senators don't take it as seriously as I do. But I mean, I get it. We all have different lives, but we also do have a responsibility that we all came into this role to fulfill this role and to do this role to the best of our ability. And that is why I do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel even when I was a part of SGA, like people really just like slept on us as an organization. Even like you just said, like even some of the senators who were in our meetings, like just wouldn't understand how much impact we could have, especially if everyone plays their part.
Right. Yeah.
We can make a big impact. Like part of what I felt was my legacy was helping us increase our student activities fee. Which was shocking at the time, but our university had like the lowest activity fee for any 4-year
university.
And we're able to advocate an increase, even though it was small at the time. But like things like that, that students wouldn't even necessarily think of.
Yeah,
like we can.
I get what you're saying about that because I'm being on the student activity committee, like, I don't think students understand. I like, people always complain about things, but we're so lucky as a university because, like, our student activities fees, even though it's still really low, even though you actually increase, like, that increased a lot for us as a student population. Like, it helped us get over kind of that hump that I think a lot of people viewed Augusta University as a commuter school, mm-hmm. and there wasn't much of a student life. And that's still a work in progress because, like, COVID hit us so hard. But I think we're transitioning over to one of those colleges that, like, oh, I go here, and that pride, that AU pride that you want to have.
So, yeah, for everyone who is listening, if you haven't already, check out SGA on social media, get yes. a good understanding of who they are, because very soon you will be voting for your next leadership, your next mm-hmm. senators, your next execs, and hopefully they will represent you well and do the work to make mm-hmm. sure that they carry on and create a legacy for themselves. Mm-hmm. Thank y'all so much for being here. I'm really excited to see what happens, Mahalia, after you pass the torch, but also Dee, while you're still here, what you'll be doing. So thanks.
Of course. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to In the Wild. If you like what you heard, then give a nice rating and review to this podcast on whatever you use to listen to your podcast. To keep our conversations going, follow In the Wild on Instagram at In the Wild Pod and Augusta University on all social media platforms. Don't forget to follow me, your host, Rayshawn Ricks, at Rayshawn Ricks, to send me questions you want to see answered on the show. Tune in for new episodes every week because we don't want you to miss a single thing that's happening on campus. You can also find out more news at jaguar.augusta.edu. Until then, I'll see y'all next time. Stay wild.